Welcome. It's Thursday night and time for Psychic Viewpoint on PsychicAccessTalkRadio.com. Spirituality, psychic development, love and relationships, manifesting prosperity, and more. You now have access to the world's most renowned spiritual teachers, healers, psychics, and mediums as you join us during this transpersonal collective experience. Sponsored by PsychicAccess.com, where all psychics have been interviewed, verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you the highest quality of quality service. And now, on with this week's show.
Hello, my name is Stephen Lewis, and you are listening to the Psychic Viewpoint, sponsored by PsychicAccess.com. In a moment, Alan Anderson, the author of The Dog Named Leaf, will be joining us. But before we get started, please join me in welcoming my co-hosts. Maureen, how are you doing tonight?
Apparently, everything is being heard, birds and all, through my computer.
Well, that's good. We're going to be talking about animals tonight.
Maybe so.
So your bird commentators are going to help us out.
Well, that's very good. That's true. Yeah.
Well, tell us a little bit about what you do over at Psychic Access, please.
I'm not a bird goer. I'm an intuitive empath consultant, and I help people in direction. And I also utilize the tarot as my main tool to get my information. And I've been doing this for quite a long time, and I love my work.
Yes, I can definitely tell that you do. You have a passion for what you do, and that's inspiring. Well, we're glad you can make it tonight, Maureen. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
Well, Steve, how are you doing tonight, my friend?
I'm very well, thank you.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Could you please explain to the audience and those in chat what you do at Psychic Access?
Absolutely. I'm a psychic medium and hermetic astrologer.
Ah, outstanding. A hermetic astrologer. Can you maybe define what that is for those of us who aren't sure?
Well, hermetic astrology is quite purist. It's focused upon the 10 planets, 12 signs of the zodiac. So it's also a form of astrology that works with progressions, which is the principle of a day for each year of our life. In other words, we use logarithms to calculate what's occurring in a person's life at any point in time, and then we focus upon transiting planets to see when those energies are triggered into events. So it's quite a complex form of astrology, but it's extremely accurate.
Oh, okay. Sounds like a very powerful method that you have, and anybody who's interested in that can find Steve at PsychicAccess.com. Highly recommended. And finally, we have Carmen, who has written many articles and blogs and is a powerful empath in her own right. How are you?
Stop.
Hey,
You're flattering me.
It's not flattery if it's the truth.
I have written many blogs. I'm probably now just as special as all of you. I don't actually have all the technical knowledge that you as astrologers have. I'm an empath, so that makes me a natural intuitive. And with a study, with my own background study on psychology, and like everybody, a patchwork of ideologies and ideas and systems that I've been working at for 13 years.
Wow. Well, just like every other psychic at Psychic Access, you bring your own specific unique blend of talents to the program. We're glad you can make it tonight with us, Carmen. Thank you for coming.
Exactly. Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Sure. Well, before we bring Alan on, I would just like to say a few words about him. And one of the things Alan does is he tries to serve the greater good of humanity by introducing us to the healing and intuitive capabilities of animals. He's written extensively on the subject. And together with his wife, Linda, devotes his energy to the Animal Angel Network, which does valuable charitable work in the service of oppressed and challenged animals. At angelanimals.net, you can find heartwarming educational stories, blogs, and articles. And tonight, we'll be taking a look at his compelling and poignant book, A Dog Named Leaf. So, Alan, how are you tonight?
Oh, very good. Thank you for having me on your show.
Oh, it's certainly my pleasure. We're very glad that you can make it. I'm one thing that springs to mind, first of all, is that a lot of ancient religions and religions that are still being practiced today, they assign different levels to the human soul, and one of those is that we're endowed with an animal soul. What do you think about the animal soul that is in human beings and supposedly connects us to other creatures? What do you have to say about that?
Well, I'd like to share with you just some thoughts that I have on that, because I really do believe that, you know, truly soul equals soul. And when it comes down to it, there's something special within each of us and with each animal and within life itself. That's light and sound and beautiful love that just generates from something that, you know, many of us would call spiritual. It could be mystical. It could be something greater. But it's definitely there, and it goes through all life. And when I look at my dog, or I look at an animal in nature, and they look back at me, there's nothing but that connection. The connection is so deep, and the bond is so there. Whether we label it certain things, or whether it comes from a religious tradition or not, there is something within each living creature that is, in my mind, godlike, and that's what we're all trying to strive for in some way in our lives.
And we don't have to try too hard, do we? They're so cute.
Well, yes, they are cute. But I've been writing books. My wife and I have been writing books now since 1996. Our first book was called Angel Animals: Exploring the Spiritual Connection with Animals. And over and over and over again, we have 15 books now. We're getting stories from people all over these many years, thousands of stories. And so often we get stories, first-hand accounts, when people, you know, really do understand the significance of that spiritual connection, that bond. And why this animal? Why now? Why am I having this experience with this one cat, this dog, this bird, this whatever it might be, helping me through this crisis and challenging times in my life, and how I'm helping this animal through what might have been a challenging time in their lives. And often when they realize that it isn't an accident, it isn't just a coincidence, it actually is something at a deeper level, why these two souls were put together, bonded together spiritually to move forward in life together, to learn lessons, spiritual lessons together, and maybe become better, maybe a better dog or a cat through, you know, being kinder and gentler with people and not being so fearful or hostile,
right.
And maybe for the person to be maybe kinder, gentler, more loving. There's a lot of growth when you work together as a team, both animal and person, moving forward in those experiences. And I really believe that in my heart. I really do, from my experience, that aspect of life we often ignore, but it's truly there, that bonding, that spiritual partnership, so to speak, between humans and animals.
Ah, very good. Okay, well, animals, one thing that amazes me about them is they have a supernatural ability to sense things that we humans often cannot. And you'll see, for example, in horses, dogs, cats, they'll right before a storm or an earthquake or a tornado, you know, they'll start getting riled up. They can sense this impending disturbance before human beings can. Isn't that I just find that to be fascinating and very interesting proof of the animal's deep intuition.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. You know, the studies have shown that before a tidal wave or before a storm comes in, the animals, if they're able to, head for the hills, so to speak, head inland. Or if there's a storm approaching, they can feel it inside. They have an intuitive understanding, sort of a feeling, an instinctual feeling that there's something about to happen that they need to be aware of and be alert towards. I don't know. Most of us, I'm not, of course, you know, the people that I'm talking with now are not in that
right.
category. Most of us are pretty blind to what's going on around us on an intuitive level. We're pretty much just going day to day, trying to do the best we can, taking care of the bills, raising the kids, all the things that we're supposed to do. And we just ignore that aspect of self. Animals are totally into that, and they totally understand on multiple different levels what's going on in their environment, and they can feel and they can know things that we don't know. So we need to pay attention. If we see an agitated dog, or if we see something going on with the birds flying a certain direction, or whatever might be happening in our lives, let's pay attention. If we don't have it, maybe pay attention to those animals around us and do and make decisions based on that sometimes that would be in our best interest.
Absolutely. Yes. It's amazing. Like you said, the day-to-day rat race perhaps blunts our own intuition. So it helps to pay attention to your pet, because he could be a surrogate for your own psychic ability, your own intuition. And your pet, in fact, can clue you in to what's going awry, perhaps.
Oh, yes. Yeah. I mean, that's one reason why we use the phrase divine messengers of love or comfort, are those spiritual qualities that we tend to not pay that much attention to. I look into a dog's eyes, especially these beautiful creatures that we have as, you know, as our companions and our pets, and I see a lot of spiritual qualities that sometimes we humans tend to ignore within ourselves and don't really build or allow to display. Unconditional love, empathy, spiritual courage to move forward into areas that they had not moved in before because they're not going to let fear rule their lives. All the things that make you a better human being, you can look at an animal and just see it in spades, and you want to become like that animal in a way because of that beautiful, beautiful soul that is just showing you the way in many ways, just showing you how to get back home to what the true self, and that's truly the spiritual self, that aspect of yourself that you've just buried so deep that you're just not going to get it. Now, the reason why I'm talking about this now, and I really have been hesitant over the period of time, is because of my experience with my dog, Leaf, and all the things he gave me and all the truths that he helped me understand just from his presence. Even though he came from an abandoned and abusive background when he was dumped at the shelter where we adopted him, he was there for me during much of my experiences that were truly traumatic and something that I... going through a time and period in my life where I really did need a friend that was just there 100% with all the unconditional love and support that one would need.
Well, I have to tell you, I also am best friends with the Cocker Spaniel. I hesitate to say that I own him because the question has not been resolved yet, just who owns whom. In a way, he definitely owns me too. And many times in reading A Dog Named Leaf, I found myself getting really choked up. I mean, on several occasions. And I think one of the facets of your relationship with Leaf that really resonated with me was your ability to communicate with him. How did you develop this ability to understand Leaf and for him to understand you? How much time did that take? What was the process of that like?
Well, we adopted him from the shelter, and he looked so cute because he just got his little Cocker Spaniel haircut, and he just was about a year old. You know how cute they are when they get their haircuts.
Oh, they're adorable. I love Cocker Spaniels.
I understand earlier that your dog's name is Max, and I can just imagine how adorable after a haircut and just having a good time with that.
Max is 9 years old, and I'll tell you what, he's very spunky, full of energy, and I wonder where he gets it from. I really do. I can imagine Leaf is definitely the same way. Reading about his narrative and, you know, understanding a little bit about his story from your book, I found myself really falling in love with Leaf. He's easy to fall in love with.
Oh, he's just adorable. And he's about 9 now, 8.5 approximately. And we're actually going to send, you know, adoption day is his real birthday because he didn't know how old he was when we adopted him. And we're going to do a little party. As silly as that may sound, we're looking forward to that with some things that dogs enjoy with a little hat.
definitely doesn't sound silly at all. Because Leaf, and anyone who reads A Dog Named Leaf, your book, will definitely understand this and see what I'm talking about. But Leaf helped you through a very scary and dangerous part of your life, didn't he?
He did. You know, when we adopted him, I brought him home, and we found out that he really didn't like men. He didn't like to be touched. He was scared of everything. He didn't sleep. He was just a complete wreck. And normally, you know, some people might think, well, why did you keep him? Well, because we told him when we adopted him that he was going to be coming home, and that was going to be it. He's going to stay there, and he's going to be with us. So I worked with him. I took him out in the middle of the night trying to make sure. This is like Minnesota winter, so it was like very, very cold, taking him out for bathroom breaks at 2 and 4, making sure that he understood where the bathroom was, and then holding him in my arms because he couldn't sleep. He just couldn't be on his dog bed. He couldn't like the dark. He was always howling. He was just a wreck. So at night, I would bring him inside, and I would put him in my comfort my blue comfort chair in my office, and we would recline back, and I would hold him against my heart so he could hear my heart. And he didn't like being held, but then again, he began to relax, and he began to realize that he was safe, and he began to sleep. And when he started snoring, I was able to snore. So that was what we were going through for weeks and weeks and weeks. And finally, he began to build a little bit of trust in me. And I began to build trust in him. And, you know, those evenings and nights when I would do that, and I would comfort him, and I would tell him that he's loved, and this was going to be his home forever, and no matter what, he was safe. I would also do a chant in order to help relieve some of the stress both in me and in him. And it was a chant with the word hue, H-U, and I would just go, hue, hue. And I would sing it to him in a nice long breath, and he would just relax and enjoy it. He would lick my nose, which he didn't like to do. He didn't like men at all at the time, but he began to realize he was safe and he was going to be okay. Well, you know, during this time period, what surprised me is that I started having some really bad dizzy spells. And I was, you know, I thought it was an inner ear infection, but, you know, for those of us who are married, the wives always tell you when to go to the doctor when you have to, so I had to go and get a checkup to make sure everything was all right. Well, I went, and they found that, you know, there was nothing that they could find, so the doctor gave me an appointment with another doctor to get some brain x-rays just to be on the safe side, even though he said this would not have been a symptom for anything other than just maybe just some ear infection that we couldn't find. So I did that, and I went to the office one day thinking everything was fine because of dizzy spells went away, and I got a call from the doctor, and this is, you know, I'm already sleep deprived. Leaf is beginning to grow trust in me. He was beginning to feel like he was home and everything was safe and we were all good. And the doctor on the phone said, Alan, you know, we have some test results back from your x-rays. You have an unruptured brain aneurysm.
Oh, scary. Scary stuff.
It is. It is. I was always healthy. I was always pretty much a healthy guy, pretty much doing the things I need to do. Never feeling like I would ever have to depend on others. And my father was a stroke victim at an early age, so I knew what it was like to have brain damage and not have to depend on others and no longer be independent, and that really scared me. I asked him where it was because I didn't really understand it when he first said that, and he said, well, it's in your brain? You know, he had me put my finger on my forehead and says, about an inch deep there, and you're going to have to get it taken care of. So I took down the information, and I thanked him for calling, even though I was still in denial. And I went in the hallway and really had sort of an emotional breakdown. I thought about Leaf and all his howling that night. And he was, his face was in my head, and I was thinking about him and thinking about, I really know what he feels like. I really know what it feels like to be alone and to feel scared and to start howling, just to be telling the universe, why is this happening now?
Now, for those who might not know, an unruptured brain aneurysm is actually sort of, imagine a garden hose that's sort of bowing out in the middle and is about to explode, releasing all the water, except in the brain, that garden hose would be a blood vessel, correct?
Yes, yes.
Okay. So this is a mortal type of situation where you're facing the Reaper there, and Leaf was... What seems to me is that your experience with your exposure to this mortality seems to strike a parallel with the abuse or the oppression, the adversity that Leaf had to suffer. Would you say that formed sort of a linkage or a bond or a common experience between you two? And would that in fact bring about some of the benefits that Leaf has brought into your life, that linkage of shared adversity?
Exactly right. Shared adversity. He came from an abusive background. He was fearful. He didn't trust people. I came from, and I hate to bring this up because it's such a long time ago, but I did police work in Atlanta for a number of years, 8 years. And I grew, and it was just, I had gotten a journalism degree, and I was going to go into journalism and do writing, and I thought that that was going to be my career, and actually I was going to work at a television station for a while, and then I had a motorcycle accident that made me look like Frankenstein for about 6 months, and I thought I would take advantage of that and become a police officer because people would now pay attention to me. I was like Frankenstein. So
makes sense.
I also wanted to do and get more writing material, and I thought it would be fascinating. But once I got into police work, I realized how much I really enjoyed helping people. people in domestics and really crisis and challenging situations beyond belief, and in some of the areas that that had a lot of drug activity and gang activity. And I really found that my being there made a difference for those people, and I really like that. So I stuck with it, and I did it. And so I began, though, to become, like, tarnished by the work, because I saw people in a certain way. Either they were victims or they were the perpetrators and the people that always did bad things to other people. So I didn't look at the world like I looked at it with the innocence of someone who didn't see people at their very worst. And even the best people that you saw had ulterior motives. There were all these things going on. So when Leif and I came together, we sort of like bonded on a level beyond belief, because he saw the people the same way I saw them, and we were trying to figure out how can we get out of this and move into a more realistic and more loving view of the life around us and the appreciation of the people around us. So that was how we bonded.
Now, one thing that struck me as interesting was in your book, when you were describing how Leif got sick and you were taking him to the vet, you would talk about the chant CD and how he liked the chants, the chanting. And my question is, because this show is about how to derive, and I hate to sound opportunistic or exploitative, but the show is about how to derive benefit from your animal, benefit from your pet. And it seems to me as if the chanting that you did with Leif and that he listened to on the CD, it seems to me as if that sort of synchronized the two of you somehow, your vibratory rates or your vibes or whatever terminology you want to use. It seems as if you two were synchronizing with each other. And the question I have is, let's say that I'm an average Joe out there in the audience who has a dog, a parakeet, a Lebanese fruit bat, a sperm whale or whatever as a pet. And if I want to derive some benefit from that pet, I'm going to, how do I synchronize myself, my vibratory rate with the pet so that he or she can help me?
Well, there's several things you can do, and this is really important. For one thing, spend quality time with the pet, not only just in play, but also in just doing the things that you normally would do in your daily life, including taking the, you know, for walks or just spending quality time if it's an animal that stays indoors, playing and doing the things that the animal would enjoy. But there's also a deeper level. Because we all basically spiritual beings, and I believe that in my heart, we do need and can very much bond and have that animal, that pet, become your spiritual partner in life. And with that, I mean they have your back, so to speak, and you have their back. You're taking care of each other at a lot of different levels. Now, in order for that to happen, you need to look at the animal, first off, as not just a person or an individual in fur, but as an individual that is a spiritual being just like you are. But then you've got to take it a step further. Am I a spiritual being? There's so many people in this world that just sort of are dead to that, even having a conversation of that. Now, there was a recent poll, which I love, a Gallup poll that says over 50% of Americans have said they've had a religious or mystical experience in their lives. So it isn't as bad as it used to be, but people still are hesitant about saying that they are truly a spiritual being living life and doing the things in life that help them become better, more spiritual, more loving, more courageous, have more empathy for others, giving service. All of that is part of what, in my mind, is our goal in this life, is to become better. Now, Leif and I and any animal and any individual can become more bonded on a spiritual level if you spend quiet time with them. Whether you do a chant like I did with the H-U, or you do a chant with Om, or if you spend just quiet time, those people that enjoy and work with prayer would be a nice time with the animal in a quiet contemplative prayer setting on your chair, just letting the animal be with you and sort of get in tune. Both of you are getting in tune with something that's greater than you, or even something I would like to say more inside of you. Inside of the animal, and you're getting in tune together as a spiritual partnership as you're moving through life and gaining those experiences. So number one, playtime. Number two, quiet time, and maybe with the chant or with prayer or something that would be something that brings you comfort and a greater understanding of your purpose in life. And of course, the third thing is a lot of quality, you know, whenever you're off work or whether you have some time, a lot of quality time just spending together on the couch or walking or anything else, that just being together. It doesn't have to be play. It doesn't have to be quiet time. It could just be, you know, spending some time together, getting to know each other on every aspect of each other, and being observant. That's one thing about Leif. I took a lot of notes through this whole thing, and I always was observing his actions and his observations and his doggy viewpoint of the world. And it just made me happy to see that there are other viewpoints and how I could benefit by just paying attention and looking at things the way he might look at them.
Well, I'm sure you've realized, I've observed also, that in this modern era, pets often serve a materialistic purpose where they aggrandize the master. I refer specifically to the celebrities who have these little genetically modified toy dogs, etc. So you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
So in that sense, let's assume hypothetically that I'm an audience member or somebody and I have a dog. Maybe I got the dog for the wrong reason and I want to reform my relationship with my pet. Will those techniques that you just described help? The music, the time of contemplation, the quality of fun, all that good stuff. Is there a way to make up for the lost ground if I've been a less than stellar pet owner?
There's always ways of making up for lost ground. I've done that many times in my life, and I'm glad I'm doing the attempts at making up for lost ground. If you really do want to form a deeper, more loving relationship with your pet, do those three things. But one thing you could also do is look at the pet not just as a dog or cat or another animal, but as an individual, a being that thinks, that is aware, that is completely capable of making decisions on their own. And when you start doing that, and when you start looking at the animal more closely and how they work their daily lives, you're going to find yourself appreciating them. So those who have gotten pets for the wrong reasons, and I don't know if there's ever a wrong reason. In the grand scheme of life, I might have done something what I thought was for the wrong reason, but later on I realized that animal or that decision I made ended up actually being perfect for what I needed to do and learn in this life. So maybe that animal that might have been gotten for the wrong reasons in the wrong way is going to be the perfect vehicle for that individual to become more spiritual and more aware of themselves as a spiritual being in this life.
Ah, very good point. There's a certain fatedness when two animals, including a human and a canine or a feline or whatever, cross paths, right?
Absolutely. Why this dog? Why this cat? Why now? If you look at your life and see what's going on in your life at that moment, you may be able to discover why now. It's not a coincidence. It's something much, much better when it comes to these two souls coming together in life, experiencing whatever needs to be experienced, and both becoming more than they were before because of that experience and experiencing it together. One of the things I wanted to mention, if it's okay.
Oh, sure, absolutely.
Yeah. And a dog named Leif, one of the things that really was important to me was that he was tended to be, and I know sometimes this sounds a little wild, but he tended to be both physically with me and also on a deeper level in my dreams. And
right.
One of the things I had happen to me prior to the actual, you know, I had the brain aneurysm unruptured, and of course I saw a doctor, and they recommended brain surgery in order to clip it and repair the damage and all that. And I was going through that, but I was feeling very strange because during that whole process there were other things going on, and I really felt that this may not work out. I mean, it could not work out. It may not work out. So one night I went
right
to sleep, and I had this dream, and it was one of those kind of reality dreams where it seemed like you were actually in real life, and everything was so real and so part of the dream that was amazing. Be there, and just like I was at anywhere in the physical, it was a very, very realistic dream. And in this dream, there was this massive line of people, and all these people were going into this massive structure that I learned represented the building of life. And inside that building, all these people were going to experience all the beautiful books and libraries, all the forest and oceans, all the play, the homes, the architecture, everything that was in life was represented in that building. And all these people in line, including my wife, Linda, and all of my friends and people I knew, had tickets, and they were rushing into the building, and I looked at my hand, and I didn't have a ticket. So I went down to try to get into the line because I wanted to be part of that group that it was going to continue to experience life. And people looked at me and said, "You don't have a ticket. You don't belong anymore." They scowled, and they pushed me out of the line, and I was not able to be in the line that went into the building of life to continue my life. Well, I mean, everyone went ahead of me, and no one ever looked back. It's almost as if I had never existed. And the dream was so real, and I didn't have a ticket. I woke up in a sweat, and Leif was still, you know, in his hesitant mode about people, but he looked at me on my side of the bed, and he jumped up, and I was able to pet him and caress him, and it was very, very sweet that he did that, because he was still not liking to be touched, but he was there for me even during those early times. And I woke up, and I, you know, later in the morning, I told my wife, Linda, about the dream and how realistic it was and how I felt. And I held up my hand, and then I talked about not having a ticket, nothing in my hand. Leif was laying down next to me on the floor, and he was listening to every word. Well, he did something he had never done before. This is something, no behavior. He had done other behaviors, but he had never done this before. He went over to the table a little bit later in the morning, pushed all the papers off the little table, the living room table, and started ripping them up into shreds of paper, into little pieces of paper. And he would gather them up in his mouth and bring them over to me and try to get me to take them from him. So I would hold the piece of paper. And when I didn't, because I wasn't thinking clearly, he would drop them at my feet, go and get some more paper and bring them to me. And I was thinking, what is he doing? Why does he, man? It occurred to me later, as you well know, that he was trying to do something that he really, really knew that I needed and wanted. He was trying to deliver my ticket to me. It was the sweetest thing.
Yes, you describe some pretty vivid dream sequences in A Dog Named Leif. Now, would you say that your work with Leif and also with the animals of the Angel Animal Network, would you say that that this work has increased your ability to perceive extrasensory types of things, or would you say that it has honed your intuition, you know, and your ability to dream lucidly, you know, with symbolic messages that are pertinent to your life?
Yes, you know, it's interesting. I totally agree with that. It does help me become more aware and more adept at those aspects of my understanding of, you know, life and what I see around me and how I perceive things. The dreams are, of course, more lucid. They're much more easy to remember than they might have been in the past. And I don't know if that's because, and it probably is because I'm more aware or more appreciative of life and wanting to gather 100% of it and not just the waking life. The dream life is important, if not more important often than the waking life when it comes to understanding the true nature of self or myself and my relationship with my family and my suite that leaves.
Yeah, that what you just said really resonated with me, especially the part about being able to remember your dream, because that's obviously where you extract the value of the dream most of the time, is in the recalling of it. No.
Yes, absolutely. It was fun. I mean, there's been, of course, it goes without saying, I'm sure that everyone recommends this, about being conscious of dreams and waking up and making sure you write on your journal, and maybe you keep a tape recorder if you don't like to write in the middle of the night, just something so you'll stir the memory, because we live in such a dense world. We bring it back and our brains are operating. We're drinking our cup of coffee, and you know, the dreams dissipate really quickly without any kind of discipline on remembering them. But with that, if they're important to you, you will remember them, and and I personally have always felt that the important dreams that I want to remember, you know, do come back, and I do end up spending time writing about them, thinking about them, doing contemplations and meditations on them so I can understand what they might mean.
One trick that I read about that has helped me is, let's say that you're in that sort of a precognizant state, you know, in between sleeping and wakefulness, and you're dreaming and you sort of wake up from the alarm or whatever, I read that if you want to remember the dream later, you take a piece of paper or something, ball it up, and throw it in the middle of your floor. That way you can continue to sleep. When you wake up, you know, later, you'll look at the balled up piece of paper and have some recall. So that's a little tip that's actually helped me out quite a bit.
What a good idea. I'm going to try that.
Yeah, it definitely helps. Now, it's really interesting because the ancient Egyptians, they're famous for their cat worship, but I think it's interesting and telling that they used the dog star as an index of when to plant their crops, when the Nile was going to flood. What do you have any knowledge or anything of a dog, the canine role in ancient mythologies, or have you come across any readings in your researches about that sort of topic?
Really, I haven't done a tremendous amount of research in that area. I do know that from our research on a couple of our books, the Native Americans, the women that tended to bring in the pups from the wild and tame them and bring them into the family and into the tribe. And with that, there was a growing trust between man and dog. And, of course, it was always the women that made it much more civilized or much more creature that would be part of the tribe. And that was something that grew and became something that we know now as our domestic dogs.
Ah, very interesting. I tell you, especially, I mean, I don't want to, you know, lean this so heavily in favor of the canines, but what can I say? I'm a dog person myself. And, you know, I just feel a lot healthier when I interact with my animal. And, you know, what I'm interested in learning from you is, you know, what other ways can the pet help me to improve my health?
Well, there's been a tremendous amount of studies out there, and again, it goes back to, you know, pets can help lower blood pressure. And this is, you know, State University of New York at Buffalo that found that people with hypertension who adopted a cat or dog had lower blood pressure readings in stressful situations than those who did not adopt a dog. And this is basically a blind study. They did what they needed to do in order to come up with those statistics. And that is, you know, when you think about it, maybe it's kind of common sense with the love and the time of being able to relax and not be on display in a work environment. When you're home and having that dog or that cat just be there for you to help reduce the stress of the day, they do reduce stress. Walking, of course, is a way of soothing the nerves and offering instant relaxation. There's been other studies about how it prevents heart disease. There's even been a recent article in the Wall Street Journal on that, when people with pets, whether because of faithful companionship, it just shows that they also provide their owners with a greater psychological stability in the measure of protection from heart disease. And these are stats that tend to be pretty much irrefutable. People are, you know, looking at these as, you know, good studies and solid scientific methods. One of the things that I really do like, and a lot of these stories that come in from people that really have little hope in life, and there's very much the one thing that kept them going is their pet. It helps to fight depression. I mean, there's this thing in this society where so many of us are feeling so alone. You know, we're not connecting with people, or people are so enmeshed in their own lives, they're not connecting with us. It's just part of our society, and I'm not sure what's going on there, but without a proactive approach to not being alone, many of the seniors and many other people, if it wasn't for their pet, they would just be completely by themselves. And the pet takes on a great meaning to them. They're bonding, it fosters security, it fosters the fact that someone does care about them, there's a love. They have to get up in the morning because they have to feed the cat. I mean, there's a lot going on with someone's life when they're just out by themselves in their apartment, and then there's another being in that apartment with them. And that being is filled with love, and their eyes are bright, and that individual has someone to look forward to each and every day because they're no longer alone.
Gives you a reason to live, a reason to keep going. Okay, well, Alan, we're going to go ahead and take a one-minute commercial. But in case anyone is interested in learning more about what Alan does, they can visit him over at angelanimals.net. And, of course, adognamedleaf.com, where you can pick up a copy of this excellent book. We'll be right back in 1 minute.
A new era in psychic services has begun. PsychicAccess.com. You can connect with our psychic advisors by telephone or chat 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. All of our psychic advisors are interviewed, fully verified, and accuracy tested, assuring you quality service. We're living in some very troubled times right now. More and more, the world's problems are affecting us on a personal level. You don't have to deal with this alone. Our highly accurate psychics, caring advisors, and talented mediums can help with situations you are currently experiencing and can let you know what the future may hold for you. All new customers get a free 6-minute reading. All you have to do is register. Why not visit us now and get a free reading at psychicaccess.com?
Okay, we are back with Alan Anderson from angelanimalnetwork.net. Alan, we spent the first half of the show talking about how your pet's intuition can help your health and can help with depression and blood pressure and things like that. What I'd like to do now is sort of shift over to a more commercial angle here. And I know that might sound a little selfish, but, you know, dogs and cats, they've evolved alongside of us. They've helped us for tens of thousands of years. So let's see what they can do for us in the modern era. How can my dog help me to be a better servant to society and contribute more to society and improve my profession and career thereby?
Well, you have, I mean, it is interesting that to improve your profession. Let's say that I'm going through life and I'm just doing my thing, and I'm pretty much I'm self-centered, completely without any interest in the people and the events around me, and I'm closed down. I don't have something that maybe other people have that I don't know how to get. Well, with a dog in your life, you can't help but have an open heart. You can't help but be a vehicle or an individual that allows a flow from you to others, because you've already done it over and over and over again with your heart. You're no longer stiff, and you're no longer closed down, and you're no longer depressed. And when you are doing a profession, especially a profession when you're dealing with other people, which is pretty much all professions, they pick up on that, and they see, I don't want to be around this person. There's nothing there. There's no light in his eyes. He's just going through the motions. Well, you have a pet in your life, and there's something going on because that cat has made you do silly things, say silly things, do a whole bunch of things you have never done before, because you just like getting on the floor and tumbling around with your dog, or like playing hide-and-seek with your cat, or doing all the things that make you a complete, total, 100% human being. And when you go to work in the morning, all of a sudden doing things that are not, you know, quote, not to be ridiculed, it's not exactly off the limb anymore. They can see you more open, more free with your words. You're able to just touch people and talk with people and open up your eyes and have the light and the flow and the feeling of goodwill and love for others, because you've seen it over and over again and felt it over and over again with your animal. So it's not, I think that helps in the profession. People will open up to you. They will want to help you. They will want to help you with your projects. They will want to help you move forward in your career, because they see someone that they really do like, because you're open to them.
Ah, so if I'm understanding correctly, one avenue towards professional enrichment is going to be through the social aspect of interacting with your pet, and then taking that outward into interpersonal, professional relationships or any kind of relationship.
That is one, yes, absolutely. I do believe that people that have pets, are more fuller involved as a human being because of their connection with animals. You know, we're living in an urban environment, and you know from your experiences, I'm sure, that very often we just don't connect with nature anymore. We don't have the time to walk through the trails and beautiful you know, birds and the wildlife, we don't have the time, or we don't think we have the time to do the things that are in our best interest, which is to connect with nature on occasion. And maybe that only connection that we have with that force is beyond just our human intellect and our emotions and our, you know, worries and concerns, is that little puppy or that dog or cat or that animal that's in your life. And that's the only connection you have. And, you know, if you close that and you don't have that, you're maybe much less than 100% human at that point. You're getting less and less and just going through the motions. It's all become a dream. It's just going through the day. You really do need to have that connection, and that dog will give that to you.
That is so true. I spent a lot of time sermonizing and griping and lecturing about how unnatural we've become. And we live in a society, of course, where we are going to start wearing our computers on our bodies and perhaps even integrating them into our bodies. And I do believe that it's endemic in modern society that we forget that we are actually hairless, bipedal apes, essentially. Primates, animals, natural creatures who were born to interact with the earth from which we came and into which we will one day be deposited. And I think that is a very, very big deal. And I know that my dog, Max, certainly keeps me in touch with the naturalness of life and helps to remind me that, you know, I am an organic creature and not made out of silicone and, you know, computer chips.
Not yet. it seems to be going that direction, though, doesn't it?
Well, yes, certainly. When, for a lot of us, the only animal interaction we have is on Facebook, you know, with other human beings on Facebook. You see, I read a satirical article talking about how this couple has, you know, the perfect Facebook marriage, you know, and it's just everything is virtual, and our pets remind us that, in fact, what counts, what is real, is it organic, tangible, natural.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm glad you're getting that message out there.
It's an important one, and I think the paradigm for that are the indigenous peoples. You see in the Westerns where the Indians, the indigenous Americans, are, you know, they have names like Running Bear and Wolf That Frolics or what have you. You know, they have names that show an awareness of the creature mind. They were very adept at cultivating that creature mind. And, I think that's something that we've lost. We've lost contact with our creature mind. And, you know, one of the reasons I wanted to invite you on the show tonight was to help enlighten our listeners as to how that creature mind can make us more effective in all areas of life, even when we're not around our pet.
Well, it is something that allows us to utilize our full potential. Why close down those aspects of self because you might think they're not useful, when in fact they are very useful? The idea of having the intuition or the understanding of what's happening around you, even without the mental apparatus going full force into bringing it all back into a mind state, to have the inner self really be aware and allowing that to come and become action instead of going through the filters of the brain and the emotional state to be able to become action, but just do what you know in your heart you need to do. And that's often what makes a good, solid, you know, spiritual, wonderful, loving individual versus someone who's dead and depressed and not looking at life as the potential in all the glories that it could be based on the fact that you're here. You're actually alive. Why not let every aspect of self, the creature mind, the psychic abilities, all those that are within you, why not allow those things to come to the surface and be all you can be? Why be so fearful and close everything down and just do what you're supposed to do and become a robot? It doesn't make any sense. And I know, you know, we fear, all of us fear being ridiculed, all of us fear our friends at work or our friends and our co-workers and other people that we know will look at us in a way that we don't want to be looked at. We want to be looked at with respect and be, you know, viewed in the highest regard by others. But sometimes you just have to take the risk. You have to take the chance. You have to get out there and just do what you know in your heart you want to do, which is, in fact, be yourself. And it's hard to be yourself sometimes. I mean, people don't like that. They want you to stick to the program and be what you're expected to be.
Oh yeah, I like to joke around that all of my exes say that I should try being someone else for a change. But of course, that's not the way to go, is it, Alan?
No, I don't. Oh God, I can only imagine what kind of story there is behind that statement you just made.
Well, you know, changing tack here and going from pets to an animal that can't quite be perceived as a pet under any circumstances. I live in a coastal environment, and today there was a news item that there was a 16-foot great white shark off the coast of North Carolina today. Now, and of course, you know, that leads me to sort of try to place myself in that animal's shoes and understand what its consciousness might be like. Have you ever had any experience with feral animals or wild animals, or what's your opinions on them as opposed to domesticated animals?
Well, animals in nature, whether in the ocean or in the forest, they're just living their lives like everyone else, and they're doing the best they can. And every single animal, whether they're reacting in a way that's with instinct and hunger and fear, or whether they're reacting with curiosity and a higher level of understanding of what's going on around them, every animal is, in fact, soul, has that spiritual aspect to them. If we just were to realize that, just because a dog bites somebody does not make that dog an evil dog. It's simply a dog that bit somebody because of whatever emotional or other aspects to the self, through behavior or through fear, caused that to happen. The same with animals in nature. If they attack, they're attacking for basic things that they need, whether it be food or protection or whatever it might be. I don't differentiate, and I don't think we should necessarily life into different categories when it comes to a spiritual view of what life is. I think everything is spiritual. And if we viewed it that way, we would, in my mind, have a much more fuller life ourselves, because we're seeing things from a different viewpoint and not closing that down.
Now, you raise a very good point right there, because when people think about spirituality, they tend to think of Care Bears and unicorns and things of that nature. But spirituality is a gestalt. It's a unity. It's a wholeness that encompasses the good and the bad. And my point here is that animals of all kinds, domesticated, wild, and of course human beings, we have a predatory instinct. A predatory instinct where we recognize what is to be absorbed into ourselves, and you know, we go about doing that in fine fashion. And I think our pets can also help us in that regard in the business world, in terms of honing our predatory instincts, in the sense of, you know, obviously not killing and eating people, but going after that sale, for example, so that you can put milk in your baby's mouth, or, you know, fulfilling your work responsibilities to the utmost so that you can get a promotion, that sort of thing. What do you think about the predatory nature of we animals?
That's absolutely true. And, you know, it is, in fact, something that we've observed in Leaf, that he uses strategy when he wants something. He does the things that you would do possibly in sales or something in other types of professions, where you are trying to achieve your goal, but you're not necessarily building a team, because some of the team members don't want to be part of that, or some people are just hesitant about joining. And when we're watching Leaf, he does tend to be persistent if he wants something, but he also takes a different tactics to get different results. I came into daycare one time. This is a while back. He was still pretty young, and he was in a room, and all these dogs that were normally very docile were running around and having a blast, and a couple of men came up to me and said, you know, is that your dog? I said, yeah, that's Leaf. He's really the one who's the party planner in there. He went in there and everyone was docile. So he threw a ball in one, got one up and running. He went over to another and got him going because he had a stick that he was going to put in front of him. And he went to another dog and he pushed him a little bit. And finally, all these different dogs were just playing and running and having a great time, all because of the different strategies that Leaf used for each individual to get them to do what he wanted them to do to have some fun. And these two guys were so funny. They were just watching and laughing because they saw all of his different methods of getting, basically achieving his goal. So I guess what I learned from that was that when I want to achieve a goal, whether professional or otherwise, they're all individuals. And each individual that you want to be on your team or want to help you achieve your goal needs a different strategy in communication, in giving them the benefits and making sure the benefits are aligned with what they individually would like to have as a benefit, and then moving forward with that. So just observe your dog. Just really look at your dog. Look at your cat. See what they do, and you can really kind of carry it over to your own life.
Very good. Well, unfortunately, Alan, this brings us to the conclusion of our interview. We've run out of time. I want to thank you for coming, and I hope you'll give Leaf a big hug and a big kiss for me.
Oh, I sure will.
His story really was an inspiration to me. I enjoyed reading about Leaf. He's very special.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you, Alan. Thank you very much, and have yourself a great night, okay?
I sure will. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that was Alan Anderson, a very, very knowledgeable man about pet behavior. Please visit him at angelanimals.net, and by all means, pick up a copy of A Dog Named Leaf at adognamedleaf.com. I read it. It brought tears to my eyes and is truly an inspirational novel. Now, I'd like to take a couple of moments here to make some announcements. We'd like you to stay tuned for the second half of the show so that you can get your free on-air reading with our gifted psychics. We're going to announce that call-in number later. Be sure to have a pen and paper handy. If you are unable to catch the last week's show, you can find a recorded archive link to that, as well as the archives of all previous shows on psychicaccesstalkradio.com under the Archives tab. Please feel free to circulate those archive links and future show details to all your friends and family. It's our wish to connect with as many of you as possible, so share that link, please. Also, if you're curious about any topic under the sun relating to metaphysics, you want to visit psychicbloggers.com, where you can access encyclopedic knowledge on the tarot, reincarnation, psychic development, and anything having to do with the paranormal. That is psychicbloggers.com. You do not want to miss the resources that are available there. All the blogs there are written by our fine psychics. Now, if you're interested in a reading from the best professional psychics on the net, go to psychicaccess.com. There you'll find the best verified and accuracy-tested psychics, each one with her or his own unique gift. Each psychic has a detailed profile for you to peruse so you can learn more about them and choose from the list of some of the most authentic gifted psychics around. It's an honor working with Doug and Psychic Access because of the high expectations required of each psychic. All the co-hosts here on this radio show work at Psychic Access. So if you'd like a personal reading from Maureen, Carmen, Steve, or myself, be sure to visit us at psychicaccess.com. We would be delighted to hear from you. Incidentally, site owners, webmasters, you can earn 50 cents per minute on every reading on traffic that is referred to psychicaccess.com. For more details, visit http://psychicaccess.com/webmasters. If you like the show, invite your friends. Join us in the chat room. Listen to the psychic viewpoint. There's going to be something for everybody there, so spread the word. We thank you for that. Okay, so now we come to that point in the show where I'd like to get my co-hosts and colleagues' input on the interview. Let's start with Maureen, seeing that she's the one who had all the animals actually talking earlier. Maureen, what did you think about this?
Dr. Doolittle was over here. He came on holiday and he came over and all that. You know the very good interview, good interviewing as well, and great guest. And you know, I must say that, you know, animals are just fantastic. And not only that is, you know, I don't, everybody has probably heard of this. You can go on there's this everybody knows this site about how old are you really. It's not a site. It's like, almost like it's free. It's like, can you fill in some questions? And for me, it's like, I own no dog or no cat. I have no animal. I drive 100 miles an hour. Basically, I'm about 90. My real age is about 90 years old because of the fact I could get 6 years added or less if I had an animal. That's how much. Wow. That's a pretty good amount. So, for instance, if I had an animal, they would minus it's better living. You're actually younger, you know? So yeah. I guess it is important. And I grew up with dogs, and I grew up, and I've had some interesting, and you know, they just, they're amazing. Animals are amazing. All in animals. And I also am real into, you know, the medicine cards and the messengers of animals. But as far as animals go, my experiences have been like what he was talking about with your dog. I get, Max is your dog?
Max is my dog. Yes.
I guess Max is a popular name. I think Doug knows that. Not just for dogs, but for owls. But you know, I do feel that, like with my experience, definitely there's a connection. It's amazing to me how, for instance, and I believe I've told this story before. Our family moved to Hawaii in 1971, and there were five kids came, and my parents, and we lived in a real lovely, real upscale area, but in order to live at this, it was a rental, and it's hard to find rentals for large families, and it was in an exclusive area, but the key to this area, this house, was you had to have you rented it, but the dog came with it.
Really?
And no kidding. And the thing was, which was fascinating, is because our dog of 17 years at that time, which was pretty old, had to go into quarantine when we moved to Hawaii. It broke our hearts. You know, she was older, but that was the rules there when you go over there or England or wherever. 4 months or 6 months into quarantine, which was ridiculous, but that's how they did it at that time. So this dog, Heidi, came with the house. So it was like, in a lot of ways, it was bittersweet because at least we had the dog Heidi, but it was this German Shepherd, and it was the most, I reflect back about how cool was that. That will never happen. It's rare in life that you have to rent a house with the dog included.
Never heard of that, but I think it's a lovely idea.
Well, this dog was a trip. This dog could catch a throwing hard baseball. Not as loud, really quick in his mouth. And I remember the joy it brought to us because our dog was in quarantine. We could only visit the dog. It was almost like it was all meant to be, you know. And I often wonder about that dog, Heidi. But also, I'll get back to my other experiences. I'll let other people talk. But I thought it was almost like there was a synchronicity with that because us missing our dog. And our dog did end up dying in Hawaii, actually, our dog. She didn't make it to It was okay because we had a Heidi, not as a replacement, but as a way to interact with our animal. And mm-hmm. and it was, you know what I mean? It was bittersweet, but it was wow. It was an experience, a dog with the house, or you don't get the house.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you, but my first experience with physical mortality, i.e. death, was through my pet. You know, we didn't really talk about that in the interview, but that's also one thing our pets teach us is how to let go.
I'm sorry, Steve, to interrupt you, but I do want to say this.
Please.
Now, when I was born, I was 5 years. I was like the oldest of the second group. Three kids were born. Then there was 5 years apart, so I was the oldest of the other three. And there was a dog who was a dog that died, at, you know, 17 years old later, that was a puppy for the baby of the family after my brother, because there's 5 years between us. So when I was born, it was very jealous, this dog. And I found out just the past few years, just recently, this dog not only tried to get in my crib and growl and eat me once, but twice. and during that time, so yeah, it was almost like a death experience for me.
Wow.
But
he about caused you to let go, all right, huh? Of your physical form.
No, but she was jealous. But you know, the thing is, I became very close to that dog later. But I saw it one time. But my mom goes, oh, no, that was the second time the dog. I go, the second time they took it to boarding, you know, out to board. Nowadays, you know, things would be different. You don't have that going on. That's not PC. You know, it's an animal trying to eat your baby.
No, it's not.
So with the idea of what you're bringing up with the death, well, with me, it was almost the death of me.
Wow. Well, we're glad that didn't happen, Maureen.
I know, so there. I just want to turn that one around. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you very much. Well, Carmen, what are you a pet owner? What's your experience with the animal kingdom?
No, unfortunately, my cat passed away.
Oh, I'm sorry.
We always had dogs as not really as pets, but more as, I would say, equals. And that was from days when we grew up with them as guardians to our property when we were living in Africa. So there was a great amount of respect I felt paid towards them in terms of what they did for us, in terms of guarding, keeping other other animals, predators, and rats, pestilence, etc., away from our property. So, for one, that was my experience probably all the way through. Secondarily, I wanted to bring up a comment on the Sirius Dog Star story, because it's very easy to default into sort of the way of thinking of dog and star. What mm-hmm. I was thinking, I wanted to just remind you guys of, is it was actually a very, very deep historical and astronomical significance to that. And you know me, I like science, going science yes. on you here. But because I did an art, a picture or a painting of this, it's a binary star system, guys. So when you have a binary star system, it is accompanied by another star. So there's a larger star called Canis Major, and there is a smaller star called Sirius. And really, that's just how it probably got its name, which was adopted by all kinds of different cultures, including, you know, the Egyptian culture. And mm-hmm. so it's such a guardian symbol. And really, I have a very difficult time in thinking in terms of animals as pets, because to me, I remember the experiences of, say, a very difficult time being lost in the African veldt and having a great, great gray wolfhound coming up and literally understanding me as a 15-year-old and coming up and guiding me. A very good innate understanding of children.
Now, you're a fellow tarot reader. You use various cards also in conjunction with your natural empathic abilities. And we see on the tarot cards various animals, crayfish or scorpions, dogs. And, you know, part of that stems from the Egyptian belief that when you died, you were led, right?
Oh, right. Yeah, like Anubis. I was going to ask you about Anubis. So I was thinking, so that was the, you know, the guide of the underworld, which is also sort of, I don't even know if it's just linked to or if it's just, again, another archetype. I'm sorry, I'm going too in-depth, but to Cerberus, which is actually a Greek story, right?
The three-headed dog.
An anthropologist would be able to tell us how much older that is. But the Anubis story, do tell.
Well, the Anubis was the jackal-headed guide in the underworld. So when you, according to the Egyptian purview, when you passed away, you had to go through like this, you know, this sort of wipeout obstacle course. You know what I'm saying? Your soul had to traverse these series of dangers and perils, and you needed a guide for that. And that's where Anubis came in with his instincts, his navigational ability. And so the Egyptians recognized the image of the dog, not only from Canis Major and Sirius, which was vital to their harvest, but also in the sense that Anubis would guide you through the various guardians and perils in the afterlife. And Cerberus, as it's alternately pronounced, as you brought up.
Oh, good. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, he was a big deal too, because he did the reverse as Anubis. He was a guard of the secrets of the subconscious. So I think it's very telling. If you're in the audience and you're listening and you want to enhance your innate psychic abilities, you know, it pays to remember that for the ancient Greeks, for the ancient Greeks, the symbol of the dog was a symbol of the guardian to the secrets of the subconscious.
And in fact, I think like a binary star, just to close, like that I feel like we would not have, well, actually man would not have survived. He would not have evolved. And vice versa. And then they became, so, you know, we have the wolf and we have the dog and we have pets, right? And those are very different things, and find it hard. I mean, as an empath, I usually look deeply into some things' eyes, and I fail to see, apart from the differences in, you know, DNA structure, the a look of, say, a cat is quite similar to a human's face. A very intense, dangerous-looking creature, right? And the dog is just so childlike and full of trust. But that is, of course, only the dog and not the wolf. So different species, different, very beautiful.
Now, dogs are, interestingly enough, the most diverse species on the planet. And every last dog on the planet has as this common ancestor the wolf, even the little tiniest toy poodle. You know, his common ancestor, he comes from the wolf. Dogs, incidentally, can also become impregnated by multiple fathers, too. So a litter of dogs can have, you know, half brothers, half siblings in it, which is pretty interesting. Dogs are fabulous creatures, and so are cats. Which brings me to my colleague, Steve. You're famous for being a cat person. You had dogs when you were a child. Please share with us your ideas about how animals interact with our own psychic abilities.
Well, I think the cats are very sensitive. They're, I mean, they're also very insensitive. I think I like the independence of cats. You know, I love dogs. They can be so loyal, such followers. But cats just have such a sense of independence and free will. So they can be very free roaming, very much individual characters. And I find that their temperaments really differ as well. So I actually, at the moment, have 6 cats. I had one that disappeared that I've now got back. And whilst I was looking for him, I took in 2 kittens that were that I rescued. And each one of them has a different character. So I'm always fascinated by their characters. Mm-hmm. And I find them really quite intelligent. I have had dogs, but I find the cats really smart, and I just love their quirkiness and their different characters. But I find that they do respond very much to my mood, to how I'm feeling. So when I say they're sensitive, they may just want to do their own thing, but they do seem to pick up on what's going on with me or within me. And I remember when I first moved to the US, I had flu and I'd just had a really rough time. And I was staying in an apartment I was renting. And I cried. I was in bed. And I felt so sick and I needed to fly back to the UK on business. And I just was so worn out. I cried. But I didn't make any noise. And the 2 cats that I brought from England were right at the other end of the apartment. And they just came to me. They couldn't have heard me, but they sensed that I needed comforting. And I also find it very interesting that after doing my work, the cats seem to transmute energy. They seem to clear me, clear energy from me. So, you know, when you're interacting with clients, you're entangled in people's energy.
Sure.
And the cats seem to somehow release that connection.
It's kind of like when you go to buy cologne or something and you sniff various different types of cologne. You have to wave, you know, the sales lady will wave some coffee beans under your nose to sort of clear your palate so you can just perceive other sensations again.
Yes, absolutely.
Now, you're a pretty sensitive person yourself. Do you find that your cats enhance your sensitivity?
I can't say that I'm aware that they do, to be honest. I've never really thought of that, to be honest. I think that they help me in my work in that they calm me down.
Right.
They're very healing. They transmute energy. So it's almost, as I said, as though they clear energy from me. So I think they facilitate my work in that sense. But I can't say that I feel they increase my psychic ability or my accuracy reading for clients. Maybe they do, and I'm just not giving them credit. Maybe it's my ego. It's all me.
Well, no, I mean, that's enough just to have them be able to sort of clear the air and, you know, sharpen your, you know, your ability to be sensitive to other humans again. You know, whereas, you know, client B calls you up seeking advice, you know, you might still be entangled in the problems of client A, but fortunately, your cats help out with that.
Yes. And interestingly, I've never looked for a cat. I was gifted the first two by a friend, and then the third was a stray that I was given or asked to take. The fourth was a stray that I was given by a shaman. And the last two, Pluto and Hermes, I took by rescued because I was going to the animal shelter, and they just made it really clear they were meant to be with me, so I took them.
That's pretty interesting. All of your many, many pets actually happened to you.
They do, yeah. I find that life works that way, though. I just follow the lead. Let spirit show me the way. I don't really look for things. They just seem to find me if they're right.
Well, Steve, I have another question for you, but before I get to that, I just want to announce the call-in number in case you want a free on-air reading. That would be 724-444-4851. Okay, so you can call in, ask your question, but in the interest of getting to everyone, we ask that you restrict your inquiry to one question that's very specific and as clear as possible. Okay. Now, coming back to you, Steve, I wanted to ask you specifically about animals in not only the tarot, but in esoteric tradition in general, specifically the psychopomps, the guides of the souls in the afterlife. Now, I know also that you do some work that transpires on alternate planes and things of that nature. What's your opinion about the mythological psychopomp, the birds and the other animals that guide the soul?
Well, I believe that they're all symbolic. I believe that everything is symbolic. So right. Even if you just take language, take a letter of the alphabet, it has an energy that is associated with a number or a musical note or a planet, sign of the zodiac. And animals are symbolic as well. One of my, my primary symbol from my guides is a swordfish.
Swordfish.
I've always just known about the swordfish.
What does that symbolize for you?
The swordfish, well, when I'm very concerned about something or I'm unsure of my direction, spirit always present me with a swordfish somehow. Like somebody that doesn't know me at a very interesting moment gave me a swordfish, a silver swordfish bottle right. opener. And it just crops up in the most unusual ways, and it always at very synchronistic times. And the swordfish means it's okay. It will be okay. Stop worrying about this. It's taken care of.
Very interesting. A meaningful coincidence with the swordfish there. That's awesome.
I know a little boy. He's the son of a client, and he's an amazing artist. He's only seven. He does the most incredible drawings and paintings, and he painted a swordfish for me. And it's very interesting because there's a full moon, and the swordfish is jumping out of the ocean, and its sword pierces the moon. It goes right through the full moon. And it was just fascinating that he did it that way, that he channeled it that way, because the swordfish is a sign from spirit for me, and it does reflect our ability to connect with spirit, to have things taken care of by spirit. And obviously that the sword, which is, well, air in go ahead.
In the normal tarot, in most tarot decks, is the air element, sure.
Yes, yeah, in the Golden Dawn tradition, and then in the Hermetic or Brotherhood of Light tradition, it's earth. But it does represent piercing consciousness for me. So I just found it very interesting that that's the way he painted the picture. But absolutely, we know that animals are in spirit. They are conscious. They play a very important role in our world. Sadly, as human beings, we don't, as a race, We don't seem to respect them enough.
True that. Well, if anybody wants to get Steve a gift, then it has to be a swordfish. Excellent gift idea. On that note, I do believe we have a call for Maureen from Pennsylvania. Yes.
Thank you. Hello, Pennsylvania. This is Maureen. Hello. Wait for it. There it comes.
Hello.
Hello. Hi, this is Maureen. May I ask your name?
Hello, Maureen. This is, how are you?
I'm sorry. I didn't hear your name. It's
Penny.
Hi, Penny. How are you?
Good.
Good. And what can I help? What can I help focus in on for you?
I have been searching for jobs for a while, and I interviewed for one last week. I have an interview for Monday. I have 3 emails. I'm skeptical whether they're spam or not.
Right.
I need to keep looking.
Right. I got it. You know, Penny, it's great to hear that you're applying yourself. Some people go, I want a job, but I haven't been doing anything about it. So, I wanted to ask you, you said something about you just had an interview and you have another one on coming up again. Is it with the same position?
No.
Or is it a different?
No.
Okay, got it. Okay, well, sure. You know, you've been really putting yourself out there. It's exhausting. Like I said, you're putting the energy out there. I definitely see, you know what's interesting? I see something from last, it could be off, but February, very early part of March, that maybe something coming back around to you, an opportunity, if that makes any sense whatsoever. I don't know. Were you working somewhere at the time?
Go ahead.
Were you working somewhere in the spring, last springtime at the time, somewhere? Can you reflect back with that?
I work actually 3 jobs.
Oh, that's right. I forgot you do. You're carrying the big bird.
And I just graduated with my associates, third in my class. So I've been busy, and I was looking for internships probably about that time also.
Okay. I don't know if you're seeking out that type of thing right now with the internships, because I know, well, that's a job, but I don't know if that's a job that would be paying enough. But I feel that there's something coming back around from around that time period that you felt you were let down, that it didn't happen. Like you really tried hard to get it. I feel it's coming back around, and you'll be pleasantly surprised. It's going to be fantastic.
Is it a job with a gas company?
I'm not clear, but
I had interviewed for.
What I do see this pertaining to, I see a woman energy you'd be working around, if that helps, closely. And I also see that this would be something where it'd be a lot of hard work, but you would attain the, what do you call it, the fruits of your labor after you put out all your energy. So gas company could be very, well, would that pertain to what you were looking for? Like I said, it's just like something from the past coming back around. You look like you'd be very, you'd be leery about it, but I do feel that you're going to be very happy, and I see a lot of success surrounding this, but later on for what your work that you're going towards. So you did say because of the degree you attained?
Yeah.
This is what I feel it's connected with. This is the thing. So have you sought out any of those type of positions as right now as we speak?
I am very diverse, and I've got a lot of background in a lot of things, so I have a large area that I'm always searching in.
Okay. I encourage you, I'm not telling you what to do, but I encourage you to maybe reflect back on one from like something around the spring, something, and submit something there. And it, like I said, I wish I could articulate better, but I feel that it would be this would be very successful. This time around, the timing.
Is it with my internship?
Yeah, it could very well be. It's that's why I was asking about that time period during the months I'm seeing from last spring. So if that was one that didn't pan out at the time, whatever, didn't work out at the time, I see it coming back around to be able to go on that road. It looks very, yes, I do feel it is, with your internship, absolutely.
Okay, because they wanted me to take testing for it, but I wasn't so sure with the companies that they wanted me to take the testing with. I just didn't get a good feeling of that.
Well,
and
at
the
time
that I wanted to do, which is all commission based.
Well, at that time, maybe, you know, perhaps you were right about that, but I'm feeling, I'm seeing here that it's something coming back around. You have an opportunity. The timing's better for it being more appealing and being, you know what I mean, being open to it, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Okay.
I hope you followed me. And it looks fantastic.
Right.
It really does. Good for you, Penny.
Yeah.
Thank you for calling.
How soon does that seem to be coming back around?
I see it. I feel that this would be up to you to even reconnect very soon.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Thank you so much,
Maureen. Thank
you, Penny. Thank you very much, Maureen. You certainly helped Penny out a lot. Thank you. Now, for Steve, we have a caller from Georgia.
Thank you. Who's calling from Georgia? Hello, Georgia? Who's calling from Georgia? Are you there, Georgia? It looks like we may have lost Georgia. Let's see.
Luke's
trying to get us connected, I think.
Wait for it. Here it comes.
I can see the graphic of it pinging from state to state. Almost
can
there
you,
now.
Can
sometimes
you
our clients tend to just sort of, what is it? They step away and they're actually waiting, but they've got another call coming in or something. So
it's the anticipation.
It.
Anticipation. I love it.
I've got my little kitten Hermes here. He's beautiful.
Hermes is a good cat to have around.
Oh, he's so cute. Okay, let's see. Let's see what Doug's saying. See if we've got Georgia back.
Let's hope so.
Well, Hermes was ready to give a reading there.
Hermes is such a wonderful name for a cat. I almost wish you thought of it first. Darn.
So Hermes,
I have a cat called Mordred.
Hermes is
Mordred.
From.
I know, you know, like that cool gold one from, you know, the movie. What was that again? Excalibur. That
yeah.
Mordred.
But Hermes is from. We know where that is, Steve. From deep, you know, deep Hermes. Is that what you're talking about? Hermes is the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. Okay.
I wanted
yeah.
to call him. It's because my
Hermes.
Two best planets are Mercury and Pluto.
Right.
So I've called one of the cats Pluto, particularly mm-hmm. because he was the one that screamed at me when I went to the shelter, and he rescued them. So he went from rags to riches, and you know, well, from a really tough life to a really comfortable life in which he's taken care of. So I named him Pluto because he rescued the two of them and he created that transformation. The Phoenix
Olympic. And then
rising.
Hermes is the god, the Olympic god in Greek. I mean, Hermes, is that what you named the other? Is that
well,
what?
I named him Hermes because it's synonymous with Mercury, and Mercury is my other best planet.
Which has to do with the Greek god of Olympia. That's, well, if you go into them, everything blends together.
Yeah,
oh,
but I wanted to call him Mercury, but I felt it was too much of a mouthful. So I thought, oh, Hermes. I thought of Toth as well, but I thought, no,
right.
Hermes is good. And it really, really suits him. So I'm walking around my house calling Hermes, Pluto.
Hermes is more fashionable too. I was walking through downtown Munich one evening, and I saw a brand of clothes called Hermes, and this little flimsy, gossamer, sheer little sweater was like $1,500.
Oh, Hermes!
For that thing.
Hermes is very expensive.
I was like, it's not even going to keep you warm.
Hermes.
And this is Germany. You know what I mean? You couldn't even wear something like that in the summertime, for crying out loud.
So what do you guys think of like a Blade Runner like robot dog situation? Do you think we can ever get into that?
Oh, wow. What? A Blade Runner dog?
Yeah, like, you know, an AI dog. You know, they're going to make companion, like affordable companion pets one day.
I think it's great. I think it's a great idea.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know. I think it's sad because there are so many animals that need a home.
Yeah, but
that's
true. They will have... Well, maybe I'm misunderstanding, but
I'd like an AI partner that I can switch off when it irritates me. I thought, you know, he's just having dinner and the partner says something.
Are you kidding? That's the internet.
Are you talking about robotic and I'm all out of my mind thinking something else? Yeah?
Is that what you guys?
Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry. I was,
you know, like
I was,
the scene from Blade Runner where she has a robotic or AI boa.
Hey, guys.
From
Georgia just came back online.
Oh, here we go. We were just tricking you guys into banter, but now we have our caller, right, Stephen?
Yeah.
That's right. Georgia's ready.
It worked.
Hey, Georgia, who's calling?
Georgia?
Yes. What's your name?
Monique.
Hello, Monique. How can we help you?
I'm asking a question about anything regarding finances, job, career, anything.
Okay, well, I feel as though your situation's tough, Monique. And I say that because the card that I pulled from the deck when I was waiting for you before, I've just pulled again, and it's a card that says the situation's really tough for you. I feel as though there was a very sudden shift in your life that occurred earlier this year, and it does feel related to work or business. So I feel that there's this shift, and the situation has been really tough for you. Does that make sense?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so I know that you're having a hard time, and you know you've tried quite a number of things to get back on your feet, and you feel as though everything you've tried has just not worked out. You feel as though you're in a period that's really unlucky, but actually the card that comes up for you moving forward is a wonderful card. It's the World card, and I really love to see the World card because it means that, you know, the world is there for you. So although it's been really tough, the outlook is good. And the next card that comes up is the Three of Cups, which I really like. It's a card that to me symbolizes success and joy, happiness, and partnership. And obviously when we are working for an organization, we're in partnership. So I feel that the situation's been really tough. I feel as though your income's dropped dramatically and you've really had to make some tough decisions, but you're strong and you've weathered the storm. I feel as though there's been quite a lot of disappointment as well in terms of a couple of people in your life that haven't necessarily helped you the way you would have liked them to. But you're coming through this much stronger, and I do feel that you're going to get work. I feel that the situation's really going to pick up for you, and I feel that you will be very happy. I feel that from November, the situation really starts to improve, and by March you'll be feeling that you're back on your feet, you'll be able to breathe more easily, finances will be flowing better, and you will look back, and there's one person in particular, you'll look back and feel grateful that that person behaved the way they did or let you down the way they did, because you'll look back and say, well, I was carrying that person to a degree and I don't need to, and things are good for me now. So November, things really start to improve. I feel that there are work prospects in November, and by March you'll be back in shape, you'll be on your feet again, and you'll be feeling much better. So really, I was talking before, Monique, about this little cat, Pluto, and that Pluto is the phoenix that rises from the ashes. It's like death and rebirth. It's from one extreme to the other. And that's where you are. You've had a really tough time. You've been feeling really low. You've been feeling that everything's been going against you. But it's really going to turn around by March. Okay?
Mm-hmm. So things will pick up in November, and going to get really good back in March or something like that.
Sorry, say that again for me, Monique.
So you're saying it's going to start picking up in November, right?
It starts to improve in November, Monique, and by March you'll be really caught up financially and you'll be feeling far more comfortable, and this really rough patch will be behind you. And there's one person in particular.
Will I meet anybody? Anybody new or somebody I know or anything like that?
Well, you'll be in much better shape in March. So you've got a period of, what is that, November, December, January, February, March, of about 4 or 5 months over which you see steady improvement, and you're really seeing the light at the end of the tunnel and feeling good by March. But I feel as well that, as I said, there's somebody in particular that you will no longer have in your life, and you'll feel good about that decision, and you'll feel good about the future. Okay?
Okay.
I wish you lots of luck, Monique. Stay positive. Things will improve, I promise.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Thank you very much for that, Steve. Thank you. Now we have a call for Carmen from Arizona.
Okay, I'm going to take this really nice and slow. Hello, Arizona. See what I mean? So we may as well just sit back, relax, wait for the connection. And it's really...
Arizona's going to get here. Don't you worry. It's going to get here eventually. It joined the union a little late. And so, you know, we got to make... Okay, I think we have Arizona.
We do. Hi. Hello there. You're speaking to Carmen. Looks like we're still having some technical issues tonight. So that's too bad. But kind of inspired by this topic too, because I'm just trying to think about all the fluffy. Hello, is anybody here?
Hello.
Ah, hi.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. What's your name?
Hi.
Hey. What's your name?
My name is Gidget.
Oh, hello. Hi, Gidget. Hi. Cute. What can I do for you? Nice for you to come through. What's your question?
Oh, I was waiting to get on the radio. Who am I talking to?
You are talking to Carmen. I'm an empath and a telepath and card reader. But I'm good at telling you what somebody feels about you.
You're what?
I am a telepath. So what would be your question, maybe about somebody that you, whose company you enjoy? Like a question about how somebody feels about you, that kind of thing. That's my specialty?
I see. It's a delayed reaction. Oh, I was asking about what is the best way to help my dogs in spirit world reincarnate back to me.
Right. I'm glad you got through on that. Okay. Because we were discussing that just in the chat room. And I also saw an interesting show once about a doctor in South Asia that was able to re-engineer a dog from just the DNA. And this woman, actually, she got an inheritance and she paid for, I think she got 8 clones of her dog that passed. And my question was like yours, how to bring back the soul? Because they were, ideally, they were able to bring the animal's genetic material back. Well, fortunately, with the life cycle of a pet, I would say that it's probably the same as a human relationship. But I wish we had been there for last week's show. And what I'm going to do is, 2 weeks ago, we had a show on reincarnation that I actually had. And I believe that it seemed linear. It seemed it was progressive. Whereas, you know, you say have the Pythagorean school of thinking that was if you had, he was famous for quoting that if you had transgressed in life, you would come back as a chicken or a bird, usually a bird. It seemed from that way of thinking always negative for an animal to go back in its evolution. But what if the dog evolved onto a wolf? Or it would depend on the breed of the animal. So if I look at the cards here, it would feel to me...
They're with me now in spirit. I can feel them around me. They come to me in my dreams.
and I'm oftentimes rescuing them. I rescued them recently from being dumped, and they're all back together. There's six of them that I've lost in 4 years, and I happened to bilocate or something, and when they were being abandoned on a mountain road in the middle of the night, I was there to gather them all up. So I know they're all together in spirit form. See, I rescue animals, and then I lost six of them over a period of 4 years, but they're with me because I can feel them, and I can see the bedspread sink when they sit down on the bed. They're with me. They're around me, and I was thinking that if I got two poodles and they got pregnant, that my pets that are no longer in reality would reincarnate through the pregnancy of the poodles, you know? So I'm asking, how do I facilitate that to help them come back? Because they're around me all the time in spirit world.
But maybe that's the state that they're in, right? Which is to say that, in a way, it would be nice if we could recall in our own lifetime our grandparents. Very unlikely to happen. More than likely, we're only assigned, unfortunately, I would say, one sort of generation of the same life, a contact period per life cycle. I mean, that sounds so formal. It sounds like it's government issued. And I know it just makes sense. And maybe I'm wrong. It's just the way we think. Like, we do think logically. So I would say that for the most part, we wouldn't know. And so I wouldn't be able to answer you that. But I would say more than likely with animals, it might be easier because they're generationally, they have, you know, quicker life cycles. And I would try with other animals. I would also try and see if I could get them into, say, my cat or my rabbit or my rat. Or, you know, I mean, maybe there's a possibility that it may come into another animal form, which would be odd to have, you know, to, no disrespect, but, you know, your dog reincarnated into perhaps a higher animal, like, oh gosh, if there's such a thing as maybe a chimpanzee or an ape, and that would be what I would expect in a way, evolutionary.
Well, so,
that's a very interesting question. Thank you. I unfortunately wasn't able to do a psychic question, which... But you have to call me if you like as well. My name is Carmen Miro, and that would be my name, my username on the site. Or did you have a psychic question, like a question
any job perspectives coming up for me?
You have new jobs? Okay, one moment. Let's see here. Let's try and identify what you do.
Well, I just graduated my second degree, so it would be a new field altogether.
Okay. Gosh. Always challenging to do, but then it's like, it says here, you were in a fairly staid field, it's sort of like you were locked in for a while, and now it says here, new opportunities are suspended let me try and put this very delicately. Debts, some debts. So what needs to be looked at here is that to some extent, you know, the fear that keeps us from moving forward is just being on that little bit of a comfort zone. We're always reconciling your debts. And unfortunately, and I think just the nature is that we just almost are never out of debt. So you have to look beyond that.
Free.
It does say that here. I'm not inferring that you have a lot. It might just be about, you know, keeping anything balanced. You see?
Job perspectives.
There's probably nothing coming up within the next 6 weeks. Are you looking actively now?
What?
Are you looking actively right now for work?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. So I'd say about 6 weeks' time, okay? So if you are looking, then you're looking at a change maybe in November. I can't believe we're already at the top of the year, you see? So And it does say here that it's going to be going into a formal arrangement. So what this could be is that this job actually does seem to go into something once again sort of settled. So were you in a job that was fairly – what kind of work were you in before? Can I be so personal? Because I'm going to give you lots more information.
Yes, I was a heavy equipment operator, and I worked in construction 30 years. But I just graduated with my bachelor's degree in business management. So I want to be on the upper end, you know.
Then you start your own company on that end. That's what, I mean, I can imagine you're thinking of doing. And it says here, there's actually, the interesting thing is that you do get the Justice card, which is, you know, here I have a Hermetic deck, which in this deck is pretty much just showing you, like, this woman with her scales, and they kind of look like a bridge, right? Or she's got the scales across her shoulder. And I'd say that probably is indicative of what you are going to continue to do, because it is a highly architectural looking card. So in terms of, you know, coming out of your work, though, totally different field, what you're applying is that same knowledge. And it seems to me that you could even be going into a legal field or something of that sort, in terms of you're looking at some kind of into a development that would be very formal in nature. So you could actually be bringing in some kind of a contract. Now, you say you've got a general business degree and management degree, right?
Right.
Do you have a specialty in the field that you're looking into at this point?
No.
That was what it does sort of strike me in this reading, is that nothing seems to occur that is of any particular focus at this point. Now, that's just because you're probably, it says here that's possible because you've left behind a tremendous amount of work. Let's see here.
Say that again.
It's because of your experience. You're needing to reattribute yourself to a new job opportunity. So what it's actually saying here is you need to take the first step to decide what you're going to do with your company. And that's kind of a different way of looking at this, in a sense that, you know, you're going out and you're looking for a job. And, you know, I'm sure that's what we all are designed to do. Anybody on the highest level of any kind of work, their degree, CEOs even, they have to go and look for jobs on occasion, even just to continue their legacy. And what you're looking at it is from a job seeker's point of view. When you actually have a tremendous amount of experience in your work experience, and that you need to actually be defining what kind of company you'd like to create. And from that point on, actually, you should be getting a higher level job offers. I'm not talking about manifestation, but I'm actually sort of saying here that because you're looking at this from an entry-level perspective, coming in as an employee, you should be going in as an investor and is selling yourself. And I don't mean overselling yourself. But the fine tuning here is that you've come in from 30 years of, you were actually out in the field, whatever they call that when you're in construction, right?
Yes. Yes.
Amazing.
We built shopping center pads and custom luxury home pads for homes. You know, that's California. Yeah. It's earthquake territory.
Right, and I was just looking on the news today about that bridge story, and that must be just driving you up the wall. It's like, you know, you're probably saying, oh, I can help. Did you hear about that bridge that just sort of warped? Anyway, would you be going into the any kind of, you're sort of thinking of leaving the field, which is like, oh no, we need as many people as possible to help maintain and develop new ideas. I mean, one thinks.
Yes, construction. I lost my job because of the economic downturn, the crisis in America. Construction is down. There is nothing happening.
What do you think needs to change in that? Just wondering, and then I'll go on to the next point of your reading.
The economy needs to pick up.
Mm-hmm. I'm wondering, though, they say that with all the changes in our economy, like the disasters and such, that they say construction has picked up on different sides of the area of the continent. You know, I'm talking from a different perspective. I get different news over here, so pardon my ignorance, you know. But I'm sorry to hear that, and I know we're feeling that all the way around the world. So now, the way that this reading seems to come out for you here, because I don't believe we have a reading here coming up. So why don't you ask away, like in terms of firming up your job plan, getting an approach for your job, you're going to get something in 6 weeks that's going to probably tide you through for the next, say, few months. But your long-term plan is going to be about selling yourself in a new field, a completely new field, hey? And I wouldn't know how to do that. You know, I've been a psychic for 13 years now. In a way, even though I've been running my own company, in a sense, you know, it's like I would say that it'd be very hard for me to think in a different way. And I'd have to sell it in terms of just starting over completely as a brand new experience. And starting over in any field right now is going to be very difficult for us to get our heads around. But many, many people are doing it. So you've got to come and talk to me, I think, as well, if you can, online. If you have time, we have like an introductory special as well, like privately, if you want to talk to me. It's a free 6 minutes for your intro special. So why don't you do that? Okay, and I want to make sure that you're okay with that, and just know that this reading is telling you you're going to get some work within 6 weeks, but then after that you're going to get some experience, and then from there, I know the economy seems very difficult, and I think that right now just got to think about, we all are wanting it to change, and that will actually drive the change, hopefully, you know. Gidget, it was really
okay.
Nice.
Is your last name Euro? Carmen Euro?
M-I-R-O.
Yeah. Oh, I-R-O. Okay.
You'll see my little face.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because, you know, the point is, I just got the second college degree because nothing else worked out. And it gives me an opportunity for a lot of open doors, but I really don't even know which direction I want to go because I don't even know what's out there. And so I'm trying to ask you, you know, what is my best direction to go, you know, as far as where I would be the most greatest asset.
That's right. And I don't want to put you back into the state of, oh, well, you must reflect on that, because obviously you have. And I would feel like you'd have to you have to pick a passion, and you have to select that. You have to develop a passion, however it is, however small it seems. And it says here the potential for you. And then I'm going to, I've got a notice here that I'm going to put on to the next caller. But it does say here travel tourism. I know that's odd, travel tourism culture, possibly another language. So developing a language skill, or you're talking about mediation between cultures. Now, this is really a really different idea. Here we go. Okay, so thank you, Gidget.
All right.
I'm going to actually have to go. Thank you so much. Talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay.
All right. I do believe I have a caller from Georgia. Are you there, Georgia?
Hello.
Hi. What's your name, madam?
It's Kathy.
Kathy, very nice to meet you. Thank you for calling. How can I help you this evening?
Are you Steve or Stephen?
I am Stephen.
Stephen, okay. I have a question. I was wondering, I was waiting on a call to get a face-to-face interview.
Mm-hmm.
Excuse me, and I hadn't heard from the company. It's an insurance company, ING. So I'm trying to see if it's no, if it's a delay, or just kind of what's going on.
Okay. Let me just pose this question bluntly. Will she get the job from ING? Will ING contact her? Will ING offer Kathy employment? 1 second while I pick up on that, Kathy, okay?
Okay.
All right. Looks like I can't say that you're going to get this one, unfortunately, Kathy, as much as I would like. And it's going to be an extremely close call for them. You're going to come close to getting it. Right now, they're reviewing your resume, your credentials. But the problem is going to be there's just such fierce competition for the position. Do you see that? And that's going to be what ultimately gets in your way here. I really wish I could come back with a better prognosis for you. But I mean, from what I'm seeing here, it's extremely close. The hard thing is going to be not to get discouraged, okay? You definitely don't. And just because I'm saying it won't happen that doesn't mean that it won't. There, but it's likely not to. Okay, you know, I'm not 100% correct all the time, and I hope to God that this time I am wrong. I hope to God that I am. But you need to be prepared for the very real possibility, you know, that you might have to look for work at another company. Do you know what I mean, Kathy?
Okay, so do you see me going in for the face-to-face, and then it's pretty much between me and someone else is what it's going to boil down to?
As far as actually getting the interview, let's just see here. Will they actually call, will they give her an interview? Let's find that. Will they give her an interview? But regardless, even if they do, the results will not be nice. I mean, you know, the interview itself would probably be pleasant and courteous and everything, but it won't make a difference in the outcome, unfortunately, as much as it pains me to say that. But let's find out real quick right now if they're even going to contact you for that interview. Okay, will they contact her and set up an interview to... And now, I don't think you're going to even get a call, Kathy. I'm so sorry. I really am sorry. I would be very surprised if they actually did call you, okay?
Thank you for your time.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you for calling in. And hang in there, okay?
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, so this brings us to the end of another fascinating show. Thank you all very much for showing up. Thank you all very much for coming into the chat room. And most of all, a big thank you to Doug, who works behind the scenes, keeps us on track, make sure we all do our jobs to the best of our abilities. Thank you very much, Doug, the executive producer. Thank you to my co-hosts for joining me tonight. And I want to, Maureen, is your show next week?
Yes, it is.
Oh, of course, of course. How could I forget?
Really?
What do you have on the agenda for us, Maureen?
Well, I always pick shows that I really identify with, and so I, as we all do. But it's on activating compassion. I have a great, great guest. Her name is Jessie Ann Nicholas George. She's an author of 4 books, which are founded on the principles of compassion and how to use it to bring joy in all areas of your life, which I feel that we all in this world could really tune in, you know, get into and click into. So I'm really looking forward to it.
Well, that's going to be an awesome show. I'm looking forward to it as well. I know I could use some more compassion sometimes.
I'll give it to you.
Awesome, awesome. Well, thank you very much, everyone. I hope everybody has a great week, and we will see you all next week.
Bye, everybody.
Good night.
Night.
Hello, my name is Res Miranda. If you're having relationship, career, or life issues, I'm inviting you to experience what it's like to have access to professional, highly accurate psychics and spiritual advisors you can trust to care and help you. Register now to get your free 6-minute reading by telephone or chat. Get answers. Get access. Psychic access. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. PsychicAccess.com.